You're listening to Upfront. I'm Brian Edwards Tiegert. We wanted to take some time to do deep background on the immigration crisis that is unfolding on the U.S. border. The United States has developed over the course of really just the past 15 years or so into the country that detains more people seeking asylum than any other country in the world. As I said, this is a relatively recent development, and it is, for the most part, something that developed before the presidency of Donald Trump. There's a new report out on this topic entitled Detaining Families, a Study of Asylum Adjudication and Family Detention. It was just put together by the American Immigration Council, and it's the first look at a comprehensive empirical set of data on how immigrants are detained, under what conditions, what access they have to attorneys. We're joined now by one of the report's authors. Jana Wally is an immigration attorney until recently at the National Immigration Law Center. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Brian.
Start off by laying out what questions you were hoping to answer when you started doing this study.
So as you've probably seen, there's a lot of criticism of the practice of detaining immigrants in general, but also family members who are in these detention facilities. It's mostly been mothers, although at different points it's also been fathers with often very young children, and they're basically held in prison-like conditions, although they've been found guilty of no crime, and many of them come seeking protection from violent conditions in their home countries. So we wanted to take a look at this practice and try to reveal some of the problematic treatment of these families within detention. And I think that we have found some really robust findings supporting the fact that family detention is unnecessary, inappropriate, and detrimental to these families.
Well, first, let's start with the trend. The shocking headline figure in this report is that the capacity, that is the number of beds available for detaining families who are seeking protection, increased 3,400% over the course of the 15-year period you studied. What accounted for that? What changes in policy were there?
Our study looks at basically the five detention facilities where families have been held. So the first one, Berks, was opened in 2001. And then the other ones are, there was the Hutto facility in Taylor, Texas, which was open from 2006 to 2009, but actually closed after a lawsuit. There was one in Artesia, New Mexico that was open briefly in 2014. And today, Berks remains open, and then another facility in Karnes, Texas, and one in Dilley, Texas remain open. So there's three open today. And from 2001 till, I guess, 2006, there was only one. So it's definitely increased. And I think that different policies of the different administrations have definitely affected the detention of families. In 2014, the Department of Homeland Security, or DHS, under President Obama, said that they were going to detain families as part of a deterrence policy to keep additional Central American families from making this journey. Basically, if they could show that families were detained and treated badly once they got here, it might deter other families from coming. Now, courts have held that you cannot detain families because it's immigration detention is civil, not criminal, that you cannot detain them or imprison them based on a deterrence rationale. But I think that that might have led to a sharp rise in 2014, which is when Artesia was opened initially, and then also Dilley and Karnes. And Dilley is the by far largest facility with, I believe, a bed capacity over 2,000. So today, among the three open facilities in Berks, Karnes, and Dilley, there's capacity to hold over 3,500 children and their parents.
So my understanding is that there's restrictions because of the Flores settlement on how long children can be held in detention. Does that mean that capacity is being used exclusively for short-term housing for detained families?
No, it definitely doesn't. And in our study, and also just reports from service providers and other advocates, you can see that some families are held for very long periods. And I can say that in terms of Flores, that's a really great marker for the for families and kind of protection for them. But it has been completely flouted by the government, both currently and in the past. And these facilities are supposed to be licensed to hold children. There's many requirements under Flores that simply have not been met. And the government continues to hold families in these facilities.
One thing you hone in on the report is the remoteness of the facilities. Why is that important?
It's important because For example, in large urban centers such as Los Angeles, where I am, the rates of representation of individuals are much higher. And now there's no family detention center in Los Angeles. Three of them have been in Texas. One is in Leesport, Pennsylvania. Another one was in Artesia, New Mexico. So when you have a very remote facility, it's a lot harder to find representation. That's one thing. Having an attorney being represented in your case is highly correlated with a more successful case outcome and the ability of people to get immigration relief.
To clarify for our listeners, unlike criminal cases, there is no right to a public defender in immigration cases. Getting an attorney means either having the money to pay for it or having a pro bono do-gooder attorney willing to do you a favor.
Yeah, and that's one way that we have seen some of the representation rates are higher than in non-family detention because there's been a huge pro bono effort to provide these families with representation. That said, a large number of them never do have an attorney. The pro bono effort simply is not enough. But that is one thing we've seen around family detention that we haven't seen to the same degree with non-family detention. But that's exactly correct. There's no right to an attorney. And one of the things that we think our findings really support is the need to provide attorneys to immigrants in detention, and particularly the most vulnerable immigrants, such as families. So basically, for those who were released, family members who were released, 49% of them who were able to find an attorney in their case had a successful case outcome, so they were allowed to stay in the United States, versus only 8% of those released without an attorney. Similarly, 37% of those still in detention but who had an attorney were able to have a successful case outcome and remain in the United States, whereas only 7% of those detained without an attorney were able to have a successful case outcome.
So based on your analysis of the data, you come to the conclusion that the United States is over-detaining families. I get how you can make that as a moral argument. How do you make that as a data-driven argument? What constitutes over-detaining families?
In many of the cases where the asylum officer finds that the person did not have a reasonable or credible fear, if that person actually does request and go before an immigration judge, the immigration judges have reversed those decisions about half the time in cases related to families. So we take that as a sign of over-detention because it's basically showing that all these people who went through the administrative process before an asylum officer were inaccurately determined not to have a fear of a return. And of course, that misjudgment creates further delay in their case. And that entire time that they need to wait to go before an immigration judge and then have the hearing with the immigration judge, they're sitting in detention when they could have been released.
So the argument coming out of the Trump administration is if you do not detain people who are awaiting deportation proceedings or hearings on whether they have a good enough reason to stay or not, then they're just going to kind of melt away into the population and disappear and become a headache for immigration enforcement. What's your response?
In our study, we actually found that of those family members who are released, those with both completed and pending cases, 86% of them appeared for all of their court hearings. So that's overcoming obstacles such as not getting the notice when they should or to the right address, getting notification in the wrong language. There's many obstacles that can present a challenge for released family members from making their hearings, but we actually found that 86% of them did attend all of their court hearings, so that these claims that people will not show up are not substantiated. In fact, that rate is even higher among family members with asylum claims. Those applying for asylum, 96% of them attended all their immigration court hearings.
So as I mentioned at the outset, the years you studied end with the last year of the Obama presidency, and there's a big spike in detentions and removal proceedings around 2014. A lot of people remember this is when the Central American unaccompanied minor crisis started making headlines. I'm curious if you have any inkling of what those trends look like over the first year and a half of the Trump administration.
So unfortunately, we do not. Our study only spans from 2001 to 2016. And even getting the data, it's very difficult and it's very time consuming. So the data we used was based on Freedom of Information Act or FOIA requests we still haven't received many of the responses to requests, for example, that we put through to DHS. So it's very difficult and time consuming to get that information. And unfortunately, we don't have such recent information to speak about the beginning of the Trump administration.
Jenna Whaley, thank you very much for the report. Thanks for taking the time to speak to us about it.
Thank you, Brian.
Jenna Whaley, until recently, was at the National Immigration Law Center. She is about to start at Public Counsel. She's an immigration attorney who co-authored the new report, Detaining Families, a Study of Asylum Adjudication in Family Detention.